Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Levis, too long in the pocket, and Vita Vea with the sack. His team leading 4.5. On the year now for Vea, and it's fourth down. Say his
name. Well, he's going nowhere. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off this week. Vita Vea will not be one of the big things that happens while Jeremy's on vacation because he is going back to Tampa on a... So it's a one-year extension. So basically it ties him there for this year and next year. And then I guess he could hit the open market after that if he really wants to. I think... So the Bills were reportedly in on Vea, and Jordan Schultz listed them with Chicago as the two teams that were interested in acquiring Vea. But the Bucs really shut that down. They never wanted to move him, and this is why when a guy demands a trade in the NFL, it's like you can't buy it ever because... Is it 80%, 90% of the time the guy doesn't actually get dealt? They never get dealt. Very different than the NHL. NHL, we've talked about, they demand a trade there. They almost always get moved. NFL, it's always about money. It's a tool to negotiate a bigger deal. And that's exactly what happened here. Maybe Vea really did want to leave, and Tampa said no, and like, okay, what are my options? I feel like that's what happened with Garrett a year ago. Garrett truly wanted out of Cleveland. The Browns were playing hardball, and he had to decide what he wanted to do. Fight them on it all the way to the season, or back down and take the money. And he backed down and took the money and got out a year later. Vea might have really wanted out, but, all right, $30 million, one-year extension, and then you don't have to sit out into the regular season and take fines and, you know, now bad blood between you and the organization. Like, okay, I could pass on all that. I'll just take the money. Doesn't matter. Either way, another trade request comes and goes without a trade actually happening. So I don't know when the next time a star player will become available where we'll want to talk about it and the Bills being in on it. But we mentioned this quickly with Sal that I believe it is important to note that the Bills thought or knew they had a way of getting Vita Vea onto the team with a $22 million cap hit. Right now, you have to have $22 million available when you trade for him. So that could have been Dawkins. Maybe there's more things you could have done with Allen's contract. Whatever that was, Spencer Brown, they have $11 million in space. They know of a way to get another $11 million in space to get a player like that. That is more flexibility, I believe, that they have going into the year than they've had in any of the last couple of seasons, where any guy that is getting traded middle of the year, big cap hit, we can't do that. We don't have the room. We don't have the flexibility to do that. We've got to trade for Amari Cooper, who has all the money basically paid out already on his deal, so he's only going to cost us a couple million bucks. Not that that was a bad idea. He was a good player.
Right.
And I think we could really start looking at who's going to be bad and who's a veteran that could get moved off that team and realistically think the Bills could do it. And, I mean, there are a couple teams. I've not done all the who are the players on these teams, but Arizona's going to be bad. Miami's going to be bad, but they're in the division, right?
Right.
Like, you could start looking at Arizona's got Buda Baker. Bills don't need a safety right now, but if C.J. Gardner-Johnson has trouble staying healthy into the middle of the year and the Cardinals are going to trade Buda Baker, I feel like the Bills can go get Buda Baker.
Yeah.
Or a receiver, or a defensive end, or a linebacker. Like, whatever they might need by deadline time, I think we're talking about it.
Yeah.
Anybody. And there is no, they can't do that because of the cap.
Do we think them not landing a fish like this has always been only due to the cap? Or do we think that Brandon Bean's tendency to want to keep his good players instead of moving them for a risk, in this case maybe a lower one if you're trading for an active player? But I think that it's been a theme for him here, whether it's contracts or trades like this that mm-hmm. we're talking about, where it feels like there's a hesitancy to move off of something he knows and is comfortable with. And that doesn't have to be wrong, mm-hmm. and that doesn't have to be what stopped these deals from happening. But I think that if mm-hmm. we get to this place where, okay, the cap really shouldn't be an issue. You can fit, you thought at least, You felt comfortable enough to call on Vea that you can fit in a guy with that kind of cap number. Like, okay, that's one less hurdle. How many more hurdles were blocking them from these deals?
Right, because then it's just, at that point, it's a willingness to part with whatever the price is for the player.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Which, I mean, you want to argue that he paid a big price this offseason for DJ Moore? Sure, but that's, again, I'm talking about dealing a player that might hurt in some
right.
way.
Right.
And if we're talking about acquiring somebody like this, like the Rams had to trade Jared Verse.
Yeah.
Would Brandon Bean have ever traded Jared Verse ever? I don't think so.
It's a great question and we'll maybe never know the real answer to it. My guess is you're right. That if they had Jared Verse, they would not.
If they were getting Myles Garrett in return, though, the best defensive player in the league, one of the best players in the league, I think you're sending Jared Verse no matter who you are.
That's why it's a good question, though, because my gut says if the Bills have a young player like that, they don't feel the need to make that giant swing. They've already got the guy.
Exactly.
But this is the one player where I'd wonder if they would break that philosophy, because Bean loves Myles Garrett,
right?
Yeah,
and said as much when he was. What was it? It's the Taylor Lewan podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Last year, like one player in the league you could have, and like you can't say his name. Be like the guy that plays where LeBron right. used to,
mm-hmm.
and like he basically just he told you it was Myles Garrett without telling you it was Myles Garrett.
Yeah,
would you do it for that one player? Maybe, but
how likely is it that kind of player is ever available again when he's the GM though? How? Like,
oh, a defensive end?
Yeah,
no, it won't.
Or any position. That guy's available. That's Justin Jefferson. That's,
right. That guy's tough. That's a Hall of Famer.
Right. Yeah. That is a first ballot. This guy changes everything, and that's the only way you're ever trading that player?
But when we talk about them getting a big fish, that is the biggest fish.
Right.
And that would be great. I'd love that.
Of course.
Do we need them to get the best player in the league, or do we need them to get one of the best players in the league at their position? Today they are practicing against the Cleveland Browns. The Browns fit this description as a team that is likely going to be really bad, and by deadline time, You're going to want to pick apart their roster and figure out, is there anybody I can trade for that's a veteran on that team that could help me? And, okay,
rank
the seventh best player at his position in the NFL by scouts and executives and that ESPN poll by Jeremy Fowler. Denzel Ward. Denzel Ward's great.
He's awesome.
He's 29. Mm-hmm. If they're terrible, he has a $19 million cap hit. I don't know if the Bills will need a corner. They could if Harrison can't stay healthy and Igbinosin isn't, you know, if he's looking like a rookie.
Yeah.
But let's say corner's not going perfectly for the Bills by deadline time. Denzel Ward is not Myles Garrett at his position. He's mm-hmm. not Justin Jefferson at his position. He might not even be Vita Vea. Maybe he's closer to that. He's a great player. I would qualify him as a big fish.
Right. Me too.
A big enough fish to do the thing we've been saying they haven't done. Go get one of the best. Go get a star. He's not a superstar, but he's a star, right? Mm-hmm. Guy like that. And I would feel like, again, with this Vea evidence, their chase and their pursuit of him, that if they felt like they needed a corner come deadline time, they could go get Denzel Ward. The cap is not going to stop them from getting Denzel Ward.
No, they could do whatever they were going to do for Vita Vea. You're absolutely right. And the fact that they have that mobility is kind of refreshing because, like you said, it hasn't been like that in years past. But I just don't know. I guess the more I'm like sitting here just thinking about this, is this not the year where you kind of have Deion Walker who could be a star for you, right? Like, I know that's could in front of that.
If other guys on the team develop as stars.
Yeah,
sure,
like,
of course.
I feel like that is this year more than any, especially with the scheme change on the defensive
and
side of the ball.
New head coach.
Yeah, like, there's...
Yeah.
The year to do this was probably 1, 2, 3 years ago when they were just refreshing in the offseason, same after same.
But to Owen's point, they might not have had the cap flexibility at those times to do it.
Yeah.
Which is why I think even... just because other guys develop into great players, that wouldn't make me want to not go acquire other great players less. That would make me actually want to get those guys more.
Exactly.
Right.
Give me more of this.
Again, like I do wonder, though, like what are the limits of it? $22 million, all right, that wasn't the limit of it. Is $35 million a limit?
Mm-hmm.
So that's Max Crosby. What if he's off? What if he answers all the knee questions early in the year and the Raiders are bad and like that pops up again? Middle of the year, it's okay, we're back doing this. We're talking Max Crosby again. He could get traded.
WWLAD.
There's going to be a. Right.
What would they do? They'd go get Max Crosby if he's available, right? If he's playing through all the injury and playing well and on a bad team.
True. But even though the Bills might have more flexibility than they've had, I wonder what the limits of that are. And my guess would be like $35.7 million cap hit would be a lot tougher for them.
Yeah.
Maybe even impossible for them to get in. Because getting to 22, you might have a mechanism for that. But finding another $13 million after that.
It seems like a big ask without a player out.
But anybody around that number, 22, $22 million that Vea was due this year on the cap, any player between now and the deadline that fills a need for them, that is a great player, that is made available for trade, I'm going to want to talk about that player.
Yeah, I think it will be – there will be a point this season. I think this happens almost every year where there's something we all look at and go, they need something there. And now they will not have, at least to a point, we can't, the cap. That excuse is now gone. So we're going to get an answer to my question about whether he – like, you willing to do it? Like, are you gonna sacrifice something that hurts to risk getting better? Mm-hmm. That's the question I have right now. And I think we'll probably get an answer this season.
Kayvon Thibodeau could be another one of these guys. $15 million.
Yeah.
You could do $15 million if he were ever made really available for trade. 803-0550 is the phone number. We'll talk with Jonathan Peterlin on the Browns. If you're on hold, we'll get to you coming back here at WGR.
Pros is you get to go against defense that you haven't seen in a non-game-like atmosphere. And, you know, in practice, you seem to take more risks. The defense will take more risks, too. So to get those live bullets and to see something, get your checks, understand how guys are moving, it's really awesome. Cons, again, it's just there's a lot of reps. And I thought the weather was okay today. It wasn't too hot, but sometimes the weather can get up there. And I think we made it out okay in terms of health. But those are the cons. You don't want to see anybody go down against another team during practice.
That is Bills quarterback Josh Allen from yesterday following practice. Yeah, I haven't seen anything yet. I may never see anything on Bills injuries. I think there was one for the Browns, although I wasn't sure how that actually finished. I think it was Alex Wright, I think is his name. He was maybe going to get carted off the field. He maybe actually did get carted off the field. I was not 100% sure on how that situation was going. He was as an edge rusher for them. He was eventually carted off the field with a lower leg injury. Sticking with the offense with Josh Allen, the big guy of the day was Dalton Kincaid. He had multiple big touchdowns going down the field, one of which I think was a little bit of red zone work where it's just right up the seam. Allen darts it to him. I think same with Jackson Hawes. Kincaid is a big mystery, I think, with the Bills offense. Number one, he is somebody that has missed plenty of game time. For a guy that started 16 games in his rookie year, the next two years, has not been the same. He played in 13 and 24 and then 12 last year. That knee injury has lingered with him for quite a while. I know many of us kind of held our breath very early in camp. We were, 3 days into camp, and there was a fear that, oh, no, it's happened again. Instead, it was a family jewels shot. We got that from Dalton Kincaid himself. But if he's on the field, he does make the Bills' passing attack infinitely more dangerous than when he is not. I mean, there were stats last year. I can't remember the exact numbers. But when Kincaid is on the field or when he's just playing versus when he's not, they average a full touchdown more.
And you could just see it, too. You didn't even need the numbers. You could just see that the offense was more dynamic with Kincaid on the field. And it was a point where you and I would ask this of Sal all throughout the season. It's like, why can't we see more of him? And it's that, the Bills are trying to maintain his snaps and trying to control his snap share so that, he doesn't go over a certain quote-unquote pitch count and have something happen to him.
In 2025, the team averaged 30.5 points per game with Kincaid.
That's on the field, a lot.
Compared to 23 points per game without him.
That's okay. That's good.
I thought it was a full touchdown difference.
It is.
It's pretty stark.
It is, but also 30.5 points per game is typically what you'd call an unreal clip or top five in the NFL clip.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, having a season with him healthy would be incredibly huge. I'm going to bargain. Dormammu, I've come to bargain. I'll take 14 out of 17.
I think he's got to play 15 for them really to feel comfortable. Mainly, you want to feel comfortable that he can stay on the field, that it's not going to be a lingering issue for him forever now going forward. I think that's something they need to see. It's been this knee injury that he's not getting surgery on. Fine. It's his choice. But if this continues to linger here where they've got to always sort of, micromanage him and make sure he's not doing too much. I mean, that became a problem last year as well, that he's not on the field a ton, even in those games, because they do want to sort of save him for the playoffs. They do want to kind of save his body. That kind of can't be the case, I think. When you look at the numbers, how much better they are with him on the field compared to without. I mean, here's another fun one. Allen threw 10 interceptions last year. How many of them, and this is just in the regular season, this is not the postseason, the regular season, how many of those 10 interceptions were thrown when Kincaid was on the field?
On the field?
Yep.
I'm going to say it's going to be one or zero, isn't it?
It's none.
Yeah.
All 10 of Allen's interceptions in the regular season occurred when Kincaid was off the field. Allen has a 149.2 passer rating when targeting Kincaid. He's one of his best weapons, arguably. I mean, if you want to kind of use the statistics and kind of want to, bring it out a little bit, he's arguably one of his best targets ever.
You look at the target efficiency, by the way, which the year prior, they looked out of sync, right?
Yeah.
There were almost 30 incompletions when targeting Kincaid in 2024. Last year, he catches all but 10 of his targets. He's thrown to 49 times. He has 39 receptions.
And this is a guy that his average yards per reception, I think 15 or 16 yards?
It was 14.6.
Okay. It's up there. He's going down the field.
He was going down the field. But Zach, when I say I'll take, you know, missing only three games, that would still be the second most games that he's played in a season.
Yes, it would. Yeah, it would.
And it would probably convert to a career high in yards, which is still his rookie year when he played 16 games.
And they used him, you know, funny enough, you go back to that rookie year, he has an incredible catch percentage that year. He's almost at 100 targets. I think he's in the 90s.
91 targets.
Okay. And so...
Oh, my God, his catch percentage, yeah. It's similar to last year.
Yeah, they were using him as a slot receiver. The big difference is that he's under 10 yards per reception that season, where the last two, he's been over 10 yards. Specifically last year, where he's almost at 15 yards per reception. They're using him down the field. And you saw yesterday in that practice, he is dangerous. And this is what I mean by like adding in DJ Moore. Like, what does that offer the rest of the offense? Now Khalil Shakir can just be the slot receiver. He's not the main option for the Bills, which is also the case for Shakir because Kincaid is oftentimes not on the field. They don't get him for the full season. They just don't. Now you add in DJ Moore. That frees up Kincaid. That frees up Shakir. That frees up Palmer. I think you can make an honest-to-God argument that this is maybe the most complete offense Allen's ever had in his career. Is it the best? I'm not going to say that yet. I don't know what DJ Moore is going to be in comparison to Stephon Diggs in 2020. But what I can say, the tight end room is significantly better than those first three great years from 2020 to 22. The tight end room is infinitely better because they still have the number one tight end on that team. He's just now the number two. And they have a better blocking tight end in Jackson Hawes. The offensive line is better than in that 2020-21 season. The running game is infinitely better than it was in those first few years with Devin Singletary and Zach Moss, Singletary being the main back.
But I was going to say,
he never breaks 900 yards.
2021 is probably the only one I can really give you an argument for, and that is Emmanuel Sanders serving as the number two receiver.
Mm-hmm.
That's Gabe Davis serving as the four.
Right, because Cole is the
But even then, slot. I've got two problems with it. One, the running game is not nearly as good. Mm-hmm. Cook far exceeds Singletary in this moment. Because Singletary runs for a grand total of 870 yards.
Yeah.
But also, right guard. Osiris Torrance clears healthily Darrell Williams.
Oh,
who inexplicably makes a Pro Bowl.
That would be his year, that's right.
And Williams, by the way, there was a play within that 13 seconds game where he gets humiliated and fast. But Allen still has to, you know, create something out of it. And I think it was one of the Davis touchdowns where Allen's in a problem and he has to heave it up to him. But also, right tackle. Spencer Brown now is far better than Spencer Brown, the rookie.
Yeah.
So I'd say right side of your offensive line and running back are two heavy arguments. Also, Kincaid, at the end of the day, healthy or not, is better than Dawson Knox as the starter. But that is the year that Knox catches 9 touchdowns.
It is. He was on a run there. And I think it's for the most part early in the season that he is just catching touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. There's one in the Houston game. Two against Kansas City? I mean, there's one long one against Kansas City that I'm remembering. But
that was after like a rain delay or thunder delay with them. Rain delay. It was like a storm delay, yeah.
But I think you can make an argument. You know, for all the issues that we all have with Brandon Bean, and there are many, this might be the most complete offense Allen's had. Is it the best? I don't want to say that yet. Absolutely not. They have not played a game yet. But I think on paper going into a season, he looks like he has a number one receiver that can go over 1,000 yards and can garner a ton of targets. He has a very good slot receiver. He has a fine number two in Josh Palmer. He has arguably an elite receiving tight end in Dalton Kincaid. He has the league's leading rusher at running back, and he's got a stable offensive line that has been one of the better offensive lines of the last 3 years. That's exactly what you asked for. Not every team is going to have Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and even then, I mean, what's their run game? Chase Brown? It's not this wonderful run game by any means. I can't wait to see what they really do look like, especially because now we've talked to a number of Bills reporters as well, too. It's not just all of us have hearing issues. We're not hearing everybody eats. This does seem to be going back to a time before Joe Brady's even really with the Bills, when they're willing to throw the ball and throw the ball down the field. But they have a much more balanced attack. They have that run game that, hey, the passing game ain't working today. Cool. We have James Cook. And we have an offensive line that's really good at run blocking. The last couple of years, Allen passing-wise, has not been the most exciting thing to watch in the world. But far from it. The year he wins the MVP, he's under 64 completion percentage. He's under 4,000 yards. He's under 30 touchdown passes. Last year, it's the same thing. His completion percentage is almost 70, which is incredible. I think it actually is a career high for him. It is. 69.3. It's better than his year in 2020, 69.2. But he's under 3,700 yards passing. He's got only 25 touchdown passes and only 10 interceptions. Those have really toned down. But I absolutely see a world in which this year it gets back to 4,000-yard passing Josh Allen, back to 30 touchdown season, mainly just because they have the talent actually to do it.
They have the talent to do it, but I also know there's a balancing act to this. James Cook is not James Cook if he doesn't take some of the numbers away from Josh Allen. The home run hitter that James Cook is means that drives end on the ground and not through the air. And it's because James Cook has taken a ball 40 yards to the house. That's 40 yards that the quarterback can't throw for in that drive at all. They're gone. And they're off the field. Because Cook is such a home run hitter, I don't necessarily know if I can suspect a 4,000-yard season. Because James Cook is that good at breaking plays and creating chunk plays that once he gets to the second level, good luck defenses. And the Bills have a blocking scheme that is in an offensive line to, you know, be able to execute it that allows for Cook to thrive. James Cook has become a household name because they can do it. And it's also why Allen's numbers do suffer. Some of it's also the talent in the receiving room. But the offensive coordinator also knew that he had a guy at running back and he wants to use him. Maybe it's the balancing act knowing what his roster is. Maybe it's McDermott wanting to run the football more. There's no way that they're going to take James Cook and limit him just because they have more talent in the receiver room. You have a guy who led the league last year. Mm-hmm. He should, until proven otherwise, continue to tote the rock.
I think he will, just not always in the run game anymore. That's where Pete Carmichael comes in. I haven't mentioned Cook in the passing game, but that's also been a talking point. If Carmichael comes in, that's what he likes to do. That's where you keep the home run threat. You don't neutralize what Cook is. You just kind of neutralize the running threat because you use him all around. Now he becomes, you know, the yards from scrimmage guy, not just the NFL's rushing leader, because you have the talent to go back to the air. You have the talent to fully unleash Josh Allen like you did for a number of years there. And with the defense having some of its issues, especially early on, that might be the way to win games. 803-0550, the number to call. I think there's an argument that this is the most complete offensive roster Josh Allen has had in his career. Maybe not the best, but I think the most complete on paper. What do you think? Sal Capaccio coming up at 11 o'clock. We also have primetime players, and I also want to get a soccer note in as well with the Premier League getting back underway later this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Defending champions Arsenal going up against newly promoted Coventry City. Again, that one at 3 o'clock. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. This is WGR.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
It's Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase.
Happy Friday, everyone.
You see the soft serve chocolate ice cream cone and a toilet one that they have?
I have not seen that. Cannot be real.
No, it's real.
That absolutely cannot be real.
I saw it.
You sure about that?
I've been fooled
Fake.
By the internet.
No.
Get got.
That's right. Reset the counter.
Man, I'm usually good at not everybody, that. The Mariners do not have a big dumper Sunday, which is
big
what
big dumper Sunday.
What are you doing? Reading books?
On WGR.
It's a Friday. Get to the weekend. I've got a bachelor party this weekend. So I'm excited. Hopefully you're excited too. Maybe you're going to Cleveland for the Bills game.
Could be.
It's not that far away. I can't say I've ever been tempted to go on the road for a preseason game. I mean,
Cleveland or Pittsburgh would be the two to do it.
Those would be the only two you would even consider. And credit to you if you are someone who does that, because that's a level of fan card that I can't say that I've ever possessed. I am such a big Bills fan that I am going to drive 3 hours to go see Kyle Allen play football.
Shane Buechel.
It's because they're in the uniform, mm-hmm. right? The Bills and the Browns, there's a lot to get to on that. Good morning, it's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today and back on Monday. I'll be off on Monday. And then we'll go through the rest of the week. So you had joint practice yesterday. You have the preseason game tomorrow. We'll talk with Sal a little bit later on in the show today. There's some around the league stuff to get to. There were a couple of games last night. Fernando Mendoza threw a pick six and was kind of funny trying to chase back after it and dive to make a tackle. I don't think he really actually played that. Well, I guess maybe it wasn't that great. I mean, 86 yards on 5 drives. That's not
fantastic.
That's not great.
No.
That's not great.
No.
We'll start with him. I want to get to Dalton Kincaid, the day he had yesterday, all that happened with the Bills and the Browns. And, of course, we'll do a ton of that with Sal because he was there on the field. But do we like Mendoza? Like, do we think he's going to be good? Where does he rank among the number one overall picks in terms of expectation entering the NFL? We have a couple years in a row here where the number one pick is just kind of there. And I feel like it's not really that big a story. Like, where does Mendoza rank among the biggest storylines to watch heading into this season? Seeing what he is, how good he is. I mean, he was a national championship quarterback that had a great game in the national championship. Remember, he's like body on the line, flying through the air to score a touchdown. With how much time was left in that game? Like a minute? Two minutes?
It was in the 2-minute drill, that's for sure.
It was really late, and he goes number one. The story is great. Like, he was not a high-level recruit or prospect before his last year at Indiana, which turned into one of the greatest college football stories ever. I mean, they were what they were to win the title before the season compared to where they ended up winning all their games and him having a Heisman season, 40 touchdowns, leading the country. Well, it was an incredible story. But does anyone think he's going to be great? Anybody? Like, I don't hear that from even prognosticators, from analysts that cover the draft, from fans. I'm not even sure the Raiders fans believe he's going to be, you know, like when I would say it's, by the way, 5 years in a row, if you go look at the number one overall pick, there is only one guy that the expectation was entering the NFL was this dude is going to be a star. That's it.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams.
100%. Caleb Williams.
By the way, we'll talk Bears at 9 o'clock hour. Lauren Cox from Locked On Bears is going to join us next in the Bills schedule.
But even before that, it's Joe Burrow in 2020, Kyler Murray in 19. There aren't a ton of them.
Well, Burrow, I would say,
had that
Burrow.
Going
what
in.
Was the hype on Burrow? I mean, Burrow was coming off, I guess this isn't too dissimilar from Mendoza, but maybe on another level. Burrow was coming off the greatest college football season ever.
Yeah.
The team was the greatest college football team ever. And with that, you know, maybe there was that extra layer. And Trevor Lawrence, he was thought to be superstar prospect. This guy, best prospect in a decade, surefire starting franchise quarterback. Before that, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, like these guys had pretty big hype. But the last 5 years, Mendoza, I don't know how much there really is. Cam Ward, did he ever get talked about in the draft process or after? And maybe that was some of that he played for the Titans also. But it wasn't really surrounding him. I wouldn't say it was surrounding Bryce Young 2 years prior. So I got three of the last four quarterbacks that are entering the league. And I don't really think it's that big a story. Like it's an intrigue, but part of this is he might not also play. And he definitely did not do himself any favors last night towards playing, throwing a pick six. 8 for 16, 50 yards or 80 yards on 5 drives. Yeah, it's probably not a very good performance. So, Kirk Cousins, your job is, you know, a little bit more secure for now with the Raiders. You also had the Bills' first week opponent that played last night, C.J. Stroud and the Texans. Played a lot of their starters and looked pretty good doing it. Stroud looked fine. I think he had the same amount of yard that Mendoza did, but on like one drive or two drives.
Yeah, that's much better.
Yeah. So the Bills will play tomorrow, and that's a 1 o'clock kickoff. We will have coverage at 11 o'clock here on WGR. And Joe Brady said before practice yesterday that if it went well, that they weren't going to have the need. This is not exactly how he put it, but basically did not know who was going to play in the preseason game until after he sees joint practice. He wants to get a look at how are things going to be done? How well are we executing? Do we feel like we were sharp? And I would imagine because if they are sharp, then he's going to feel like I've got no need to put these guys at risk in an uncontrolled environment on Saturday in the preseason. And as much as I can tell from the beat reporters, Sal, that was on the field, and the video, because I guess they were allowed to videotape practice and post it, so we saw all the plays and we saw all the big moments that happened. I kind of feel like the Bills' offense looked sharp. And the guy that stood out the most, at least what I saw, was that Dalton Kincaid had big plays. He had one touchdown down the field where he ended up wide open. It might have been a broken coverage, honestly. So I don't know how much I want to get into like Kincaid wrecking the Browns defenders yesterday. Just could not cover him. But
he even admitted that it was broken coverage, if I'm not mistaken. So.
Yeah. There was a red zone touchdown, though, that he scored. Also, I saw a clip of that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe a little bit of a Kincaid day. And with all the receiver injuries that they've got, he's important. It was interesting, though, to me that there's Kincaid, and he's practicing, and he's doing all the things, and he's not, you know, he's not being held back, as far as we can tell. But he's got a long black sleeve still on that leg. And I'm not going to be medical guy here and tell you what that means for the knee and, you know, whether that's a sign of worry or not. But it doesn't have to be a sign of worry, but it's just a reminder that this guy has had a lot of problems staying on the field. And that is both being active for games and playing a lot when he is active for games. And we've done this before. this old song and dance on, like, what is his value if he is what he is and what the Bills want him to be. And he is like the toughest puzzle piece, I think, to fit in for what the Bills want, what we should want out of him overall, what they're going to do paying him. Just, it is such a tough thing to figure out because he's good, but he does not play all that much. And at the same time, I really wonder what the value of Kincaid is, even though he is good, when he makes you the most predictable offense in the league when he's on the field. And is that a good thing? Do the Bills want that? There also, yesterday, were plays made by Dawson Knox that I saw. Jackson Hawes. And Matt Beauvais talked about that on the podcast with Sal. It's always game day in Buffalo yesterday. Listen to their recap of what they saw on the field. And one of the first things they got into is that Jackson Hawes was making some plays down the field and that he might be the Bills' secret weapon going into this year. Like, I don't think, like, really he's going to be a target hog at all. Like, he's going to get a couple of passes thrown his way here and there. But when do the Bills feel like they are the best offense that they could be and are their most unpredictable? Because as a coordinator, you don't want the defense to know what you are doing. And do they feel like they're a better defense when Knox and Hawes are on the field? Or do they feel are better offense? Or do they feel like they're a better offense when Kincaid is on the field? Even if Kincaid is a better player. Because when Knox is out there, defense has no idea what I'm doing. When Kincaid is out there, you got a 9 out of 10 bet that they're throwing the ball and he's going to be running a route. Knox doesn't even always have to run the route, but he might stay in, he might go out, and he's fine. He's not anything crazy. But I just am always wondering what they truly want when they have all of their tight ends available, because they all have their skills and they are all useful players. But they are so different that, again, that is where the different personnel packages come in, how often you're running it, how often guys are getting thrown the ball, and where Knox slides into all this. Like, often it's about, like, well, Kincaid can do this, and Hawes can do this, and both of them can't do either thing. But when I look at the best tight ends around the league, and when you look at, like, what Jeremy Fowler and his list, or the NFL Top 100 list, like any list that you really want to look at, for who are the best tight ends in football. And you'll see Trey McBride up there, and you'll see George Kittle, and you'll see Sam Laporta, and Tyler Warren, and Tucker Kraft, and Colston Loveland. Like, these are the best tight ends in football now. This group, post-Kelsey, those are the guys. And all of those guys, if I'm stopping one short, I'm being a little cute on this. Like, I'm not going to Kyle Pitts.
No.
Because Kyle Pitts would not be into this point. So there's, like, another guy out there that is like Kincaid in that. I think he makes you a little more predictable because you know the things he can't do. But Loveland, Kraft, Laporta, Kittle, McBride, Bowers, to a lesser extent Bowers, but all of those other guys. All of those other guys can do it all. And they're never leaving the field. And they're always going to be out there. And if you're playing the Lions and Sam Laporta is on the field, there's no tell from that. You have no greater sense of whether the Lions are going to run the ball here or throw the ball because Sam Laporta is on the field. When Tucker Kraft is out there for the Packers, you have no greater sense of whether the Packers are going to throw the ball or whether they are going to run the ball. And Kincaid is so different from that because the numbers from last year and what the Bills did when he was on the field, they were the most predictable offense in the league when Kincaid was on the field.
Yep.
And what's better? The more skilled, I would say more talented tight end, Dalton Kincaid, being out there, but you know what's coming, or Dawson Knox, who's just a fine tight end, but you don't know. We could run it here. We could throw. He's a good blocker. He's a dangerous enough weapon. Like, this could be 11 personnel throwing the ball, spreading it out. Like, you don't know what we're doing when Knox is out here. There's a value versus talent argument there that I think will be interesting to see play out, because we'll see it. We'll see how often the Bills are running Kincaid out onto the field. We'll see how often Knox is playing. Right. I mean, Knox does play more, and maybe that should go. That should just go to show you, like, Knox might be more valuable. The Knox packages might be more valuable. He played 58% of the snaps last year. Kincaid didn't do that.
It's like, and less than 30 for Kincaid.
Right. I mean, Kincaid, there's injuries also.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you just take the games they play in, like, it's not really, oh, Kincaid is just hurt, and when he is active, he's playing twice as much. Like, that's not it. So that room is going to be so interesting to see evolve, because I can't believe the Bills want it to be the exact same way. I think they want to evolve from it, and that evolution on the short term has to be Kincaid evolves. Kincaid evolves into somebody that they can always have out there. And or not even just playing 100% of the snaps. Maybe it's like Knox. Knox is playing 60% of the snaps, but you don't know what we're doing in those 60%.
Right. He can block. He can, you know, run out and run a route. Like, he's just got to be more well-rounded. If it were me valuing what is what, I would rather get rid of the predictability, right, which is Kincaid in this instance, you know? I'd rather be unpredictable on offense with mediocre tight ends than have a great tight end who's telling them exactly what you're doing.
And they have to make a decision on this next year, because eventually here, what are you going to do paying him? Mm-hmm. He's got this year at $4 million, not a problem at all. That's cheap, and you don't need a guy to be a 100-reception guy on a $4 million contract. It may be nice. That's where you get, you know, a bonus, a plus, when you're drafting guys and they're star players while they're on their rookie contracts. Next year on the fifth-year option, $8 million, still relatively cheap for a tight end. So that's one more year. But contract extensions, we just saw this with Osiris Torrance. We saw it with James Cook. We've seen it with many Bills. The Bills like to do their deals the year prior to free agency. And they don't get near having to decide on the franchise tag. And I wonder here, is this going to be another example of the Bills saying, yeah, he's pretty good, but even though we know there are big limitations here, we know he's pretty good. And we're just going to pay another one of our draft picks who is pretty good. And that's not going to be that expensive. Or are the Bills going to decide, you know, in this situation, let's play it out. Let's take him to the end. And you know what? If it does go really, really well for him, then, and we can't figure out a contract, or we're still nervous about injury or whatever, then maybe we'll go down a path that we've never taken before, which is we'll take this right up to the end, and if we want to, we'll tag him. We'll tag him. We've never tagged anybody. You know, teams like Cincinnati do that. Dallas does that. There are others. The Bills have never come near tagging a guy. I can't even remember. Is there a time where it's even been a debate? I don't think so. Tremaine Edmonds hit free agency, but linebacker is so skewed by the pass rushers that fall under the same category that inside linebackers are never considered for the franchise tag. The Bills have never come near it.
I think they apparently tagged Cordy Glenn before,
right,
they signed him.
And that's pre-Bean.
Yeah.
That's pre-Bean.
So in this era, they've never, right, yeah, like you said, never done it.
Because in that circumstance, now I'm looking at Kincaid and saying, I don't even have to value him crazy high. I can just like the player, want to keep him around, and I could keep him for 3 years from now without ever extending him.
Right. The franchise tag for a tight end, by the way, $15 million.
And that's the only reason I even bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's because that's one of the most affordable franchise tags that are out there. It's not receiver, which is approaching $30 million. It's not, you know, I mean, offensive line is over $25 million now. $15 million? That's not bad. That's not that expensive for a player. And I don't know. I just don't know what the likelihood is. I think I want to put my chips down that the most likely is that he'll just be another example of, yeah, we like this guy. He's not unbelievable, but he's pretty good, and we'll pay him.
Isn't it frustrating, though, because he feels like he has the ceiling to be kind of unbelievable? It's not just an average guy walking through. Like, that guy's got the potential to be a top tight end in the league.
At what point, though, do we have to stop
saying that?
Because we know what the limitations are. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and that doesn't even have to include the injury part of it. If we acknowledge that Dalton Kincaid is such a bad blocker or is so fragile that they can't put him out there in those situations, well, then you actually don't have one of the highest, you don't have a high ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the ceiling of a George Kittle or a Trey McBride, because for you to be as good as guys like that, you have to play all the time in all situations.
Right. You can't do a major part of the job.
Unless you are going to be, and there are guys like this too, because, like, again, I mentioned Bowers. Bowers is not, you know, Mr. Blocker. Like, he is a great elite tight end in the league because he's a great pass catcher. But to what level? I mean, his rookie season, he had 1,200 yards. I mean, does he have more in his two seasons than Kincaid does? That can't be right, right? Bowers has 1,700 yards in 1,874 in 2 years. And by the way, he also missed six or five games last year.
Yeah.
So in 2 years, missing five games, Bowers has over 1,800 yards.
Okay.
And Dalton Kincaid in 3 years has 1,600 yards. So you can be one of the better tight ends in football. If, like, Jimmy Graham did this 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You don't have to be the great blocker. But then you better be, like, the best pass-catching tight end in the NFL. And the last thing I want to say on this, we'll talk more about tight end and Kincaid when Sal joins at 8, is look at the direction the league is going. I mentioned Jimmy Graham there, but Jimmy Graham played his best football in an offense and in an era where the game was being opened up. Like, passing was through the roof numbers. Drew Brees was throwing for 5,000 plus yards a season, and Graham was able to be elite tight end. I mean, he caught 16 touchdowns in a year. Some of those seasons that he had. He is not in the Kelce Gronk category because he didn't do it for as long, but that dude had a four-year stretch there that's as good as any tight end that's ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't block at all. Can you be that today? Because what we've seen evolve in the NFL in the last 3 years is, while defenses have suppressed passing, and I think there was a stat around the time probably Graham played where, like, 7-8 years ago, there were 25 quarterbacks in the NFL that averaged 250 passing yards per game. Last year, there were 7.
Yeah.
We know passing is down. We know big plays are down because defenses are giving you the run and trying to stop you from throwing it over the top. And with that, you're seeing heavier packages. You're seeing more big bodies on the field. 12 personnel with two tight ends is way up. Everybody wants to do it. The Jaguars picked this year's version of Jackson Hawes, a blocking tight end, in the second round.
Yeah.
These teams want tight ends out there that can block because they're all running it more than they were 5 years ago. And then you could pass out of it, play action. The Niners are doing it. Everybody's doing it. And to do that, though, you'd like to have two guys that could be on the field that are a part of that run game. And also a great pass catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I would argue Kincaid does not have the ceiling to be one of the best tight ends in football. Because if he's not capable of being a part of that evolution in the league, and he's just kind of out here, we got to do this specific thing with him, and he can only play a certain amount, like, that's not one of the best tight ends in football. That's a good tight end.
Right.
Like, you could be better than Kyle Pitts. Because I think Kyle Pitts is a lot of those same things. But you're not ever, ever going to be in the same breath as your McBrides and your Kittles when he's healthy and guys like that.
Yeah, but even Kelce, I would say, was an average blocker, right? Like, he was more of an elite pass catcher and just he was willing to block. Like, that's all Kincaid really has to do, I feel like. Just get to a point where it's more standard blocking than below average, if you will.
Right, but that is showing I don't even have to be a great blocker, but I just have to stay on the field.
Right.
And I can't have my offense tipping my hand to get me out there. And, right, Kelce was fine at this, right? Like, you know, run blocking, he was totally fine. Like, never really a bad player in that department, as far as I could tell. And he never left the field in his career. Like, 90% of the snaps, at least, almost every single year for the majority of his prime. So, that's all you got to do. You got to be good enough at it and available enough at it that you just don't tip your hand. Because I think you're suffering something when that happens. 803-0550 is the phone number. Talking a little Kincaid there. Again, he was great yesterday. You know, like a couple of open touchdowns. Again, maybe they were broken plays, but he had been quiet, right? Like open practice and the blue and red scrimmage and the preseason game. We hadn't really heard his name in, I would say, a week or so. But yesterday, it was about him. Bills and Browns tomorrow. Open practice yesterday. Thought maybe coming up at 7 o'clock, we could play around with one and done, which we have not played yet this week.
Yeah.
And we could do that looking around the AFC, a minute on each team. Then Sal's coming up at 8 o'clock, and Lauren Cox from Locked On Bears is going to join us at 9 o'clock. So a lot of time for your phone calls, some fun stuff to get to along the way as well. And also yesterday's preseason action. For your fantasy drafts coming up, I think this is one of the biggest fantasy drafts of the year. This weekend and next weekend might be the biggest two. So if you're watching these games, there were some guys that you want to slow your roll on. They look good, but don't go crazy. Got that too. All headed your way. It's Joe DiBiase, Joe Callion today. Owen Parker's off. Jeremy's off. Jeremy's back on Monday. And this is WGR.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
When it comes to my policy, Farmers gives it to me straight, so there's no surprises.
It's your coverage. You should never be confused.
You hear that? An insurance provider with a conscience.
We're a choir, but yes, we have that too.
Straightforward coverage you can literally understand. That's what you get when
you have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
And the Bills having joint practice with the Browns yesterday and preseason game number two tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We just talked briefly with Pat Hammer. There's a chance of thunderstorms right at the beginning and even through the game. So we'll see what kind of game weather-wise we get. But Sal, from all the clips, it looked like a beautiful day yesterday.
No, it was great yesterday. Actually got hot out. Didn't start off that day. Actually thought it could rain in the afternoon, but that kind of went away pretty quickly. It was pretty cloudy, but then once the sun came out, it got hot. And it you know, the Bills have been practicing early morning in training camp. I think they're going to have afternoon practice during the season. So to have a mid-afternoon practice, 1:20 p.m. is when it started, a little bit hotter than what we've been used to as well.
All right. Was it grass, by the way, the Browns field? Or is it turf?
Yes, it's grass field. So they have a training facility. It's probably a little closer to Cleveland than Orchard Park is to Buffalo, but not much. So about 20 minutes outside at tops. It's in Berea. I said it wrong a few times, and people let me know. Not Berea, it's Berea. So it's in Berea, and it's a nice training complex. It's not a college stadium. They bring in auxiliary bleachers, but they have two large fields. It looks a lot like the Bills' practice field outside their field house, but maybe a little more space because they want, you put bleachers there and there for fans. There were no fans there yesterday, though, other than look like maybe some VIP corporate people, maybe about 50 to 100 of those tops, and that was it.
So there's a lot to get to on what happened on the field, Sal, but how about before we do that, like what Joe Brady said right before, and then also the injury report. The Barnes Firm injury report brought to you by the Barnes Firm car crash. You got to call the Barnes Firm, 1-800-8-MILLION. So we got what we expected, right? Like Brady said that the joint practice would determine whether they play guys on Saturday, who plays on Saturday. And then also what we saw injury-wise wasn't that different, right? Unless am I missing a change from their last practice?
The injury situation hasn't changed much. They did not have a lot of the same guys they haven't had. That includes four receivers. There was one new injury, an injured receiver. That is Dante Pettis. So add him to the injured wide receiver group. So no Keon Coleman with a walking boot on once again. Khalil Shakir, I mean, a lot of us in the media thought maybe a vet rest day because we don't get these updates right now and exactly what it is when he missed the open practice Tuesday. Not the case because he didn't practice again in this setting. So he was out. So you got Keon out. You got Khalil Shakir out. You still have, who am I missing here? Skylar Bell. Skylar Bell was out, but he came out to practice and did work on the side with the trainer with his helmet on. So that's good news. That's encouraging. It means he's kind of getting close, I guess. And Dante Pettis, add him to the mix. So there's four receivers right there. C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Ty Johnson. Both were out on the field, walking around with their position groups, but not practicing. So at least we saw them. Same thing with Connor McGovern. We did not see Ed Oliver at all. So I don't know if he was present, didn't make the trip, but he wasn't out there. And, when it comes to the updates from Joe Brady, again, he even said, I'm going to have to tell you guys more in a couple weeks when the rules change, but he's not doing that right now. He's not going to tell us anything right now. We're just kind of have to wait and see, so to speak, on what happens.
And in terms of what he said about who will play tomorrow, would we be guessing at this point? But especially, thinking about like if there's weather tomorrow, Sal, like this was not Brady as the head coach, this was McDermott, but there were times in the past where it was in Pittsburgh where I remember right where Allen was going to play and then didn't because of the rain.
Yep.
And maybe that doesn't matter here because if he looked sharp yesterday, and at least from your feed and other videos I saw, I mean, it seemed that way. Maybe they don't feel like they need to play him.
If Joe Brady, if his messaging stays on point from what he said yesterday, I can't imagine the starters playing. And the reason is what he basically said was, in an ideal world, you'd love them to get a lot of good work in, and then you don't have to play them on Saturday. And I'm going to tell you, Joe, I tried to count, I think, five of these joint practices now. This is the best one from that standpoint that I've ever covered. And what I mean is just really good work on both sides. The starters played a lot. There was none of the nonsense. There was some minor pushing and shoving every once in a while, but nothing that took away from even moving on to the next play. And the starters played a lot. I can't imagine if Joe Brady told his team the same thing he told us, which is you go out there, you put in a hard day's work, and we're going to lay off you on Saturday, that he wouldn't do that. Because I think that happened. I was very impressed with the professional way that this was conducted by both organizations. And what I mean by that is you look around the league, you see these fights that are happening, you see all the nonsense and the stuff that's happening to take away from the practice. They got good work in yesterday. They got efficient work in yesterday. I'd be surprised if we saw the starters. The other difference is, if I remember back to Pittsburgh, and all these things are different. Back in Pittsburgh, I don't think I remember the starters doing as much. It was they got work in, but it was a lot more even where the backups were in a little bit more. This was, yes, the twos and threes played yesterday, but this was a lot of starters work yesterday.
Right. And right, so that would go for both sides then, maybe. And in terms of what we saw on the field, you wrote about it at the website, WGR550. I heard you and Matt lead off with it on your podcast, Always Game Day in Buffalo, that it was a big day for the tight ends.
Yeah, it was. I mean, right away. I mean, Jackson Hawes, I have a video of him catching a touchdown right down the seam. It looked just like the play against Baltimore, you know, near the end when he got to the goal line there. Very, very similar. Dalton Kincaid was seemingly just forgotten about by the Cleveland Browns. I have no idea what was going on, but they just didn't cover him on a couple of plays. He's standing in the end zone, ball coming right at you on the video that I have in the red zone where he's standing wide open and Josh just kind of moves out of the pocket a little bit and finds him. And then they go to a two-minute drill, Joe. There's one play, and I don't know who caught the pass for the Bills on the sidelines. It might have been Mecole Hardman or someone, but they get a nice little like 15-yard gain. It's the first play of a two-minute drill. Get a nice 15-yard gain. And then in the very next play, Dalton Kincaid is just running so open. Even he was surprised how open he was. I guess like afterwards, he had said something to the effect of like, I was so open, I wanted to make sure I caught it. Like that can happen when you're that wide open for a touchdown. Josh just flung it down the field. Clearly a busted coverage. Dawson Knox got involved in a nice tight end screen that was that I have. Mm-hmm. I put some video on right in front of us. I talked to Dawson about Jackson Hawes. And I said, man, he caught a couple of touchdowns. He said, more than a couple, Sal. He caught three. I'm like, well, I only saw two. I guess he caught three. So that just gives you an idea of how good the tight ends were yesterday. Now, part of that is also the Bills were without those receivers, too. So, you know, you have to step up in the passing game more. Guys have to be a part of that.
Is Kincaid doing this, making plays? I know you said like a couple of plays, maybe the Browns just forgot about him. But making plays on a regular basis, going back to St. John Fisher. Because really, I feel like his name has not come up a lot in recent days, and maybe that's just because we're all focusing more on the receivers. Given that is where Allen threw the ball in the preseason game. So, I don't know, it feels like it's been a little bit of a quiet August here for Kincaid, leading up to yesterday.
I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I think because the biggest reason why Dalton Kincaid's name gets brought up, or this time of year, with fans right now is injuries, right? Is he playing? Is he out there? If you're not hearing anything about Dalton Kincaid, I think that's a good thing. That means he's out there. He's playing. He's not taking days off. They're not load managing him. He did have a sleeve on his leg yesterday. So, you know, but no brace or anything like that. So, yeah, I agree. It's been a bit quiet from that standpoint. But, I mean, I think he was very, very strong at training camp. He was very involved in the offense. It's just such a... We live in a fantasy world. I know that. So I'll try to answer or say this from a fantasy perspective, but related to football, which is I get asked a lot about usage, right? How much is he going to be on the field? Look at the volume last year. How's that translate? It's so hard to tell, Joe. I mean, I legitimately think the Bills could have the argument for the best tight end room in the league. And they have a pass catching tight end in Dalton Kincaid, who could be a matchup nightmare, who can get down the field, catch as a wide receiver, essentially. They have the best blocking tight end in football, one of them at least, in Jackson Hawes. I'm sorry, in Jackson Hawes. And then they have the guy in between in Dawson Knox, and they use all of them. And if Dalton Kincaid isn't on the field, it's not because they're afraid of his injuries necessarily. Sure, do you want to make sure you keep him fresh? Sure. It's not because of that. Not because he's doing something wrong. It's because they just have options, and they can kind of dictate to the defense what they want to do. So it's a bit of a tricky kind of thing to figure out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. The only thing that – we talked about this with you at some point during the summer. The only thing that I'm not sure they would love, or maybe they don't care because it seems to go well with their offense a lot no matter what, that – the numbers about like how predictable they are when Kincaid's out there or when Hawes is out there. And yes. I don't know how much that's really come up since they've hit the field, but I don't know. Like, do we think they care about that? Or do we feel like maybe they think it's a strength of ours. And yeah, it might tip our hand a bit when Kincaid is out there, but he's still out there catching the ball. I mean, he was number one for tight ends in yards per route run. I guess that's the point that I always think about when I think about their skill sets they have at tight end and how much it actually matters that they're predictable.
Totally fair question. I guess we're not going to know until we get into a season and see. And, Joe, honestly, that might be on a week-to-week basis. You know, they may say going to one game and go, I don't care if we're predictable. We have a matchup here and we're going to take advantage of it. And we're going to put Dalton Kincaid in the field and throw the ball all the time and hardly ever run. They may go into another game and say, look, this team, you know, if we put Dalton Kincaid on the field, we can get them in a personnel where we're going to have to trust his blocking and do that. I think that would be the more, you know, the smarter approach. And I wouldn't be surprised if it is the approach. But I don't think that anything that if Dalton Kincaid is not like on the field for 75% of the snaps, whatever you want to say, I don't think that's an indictment on, you know, anything with his injury status or what they feel about him as a player. I just think they really like the guys they have and that they can go to a lot of different ways to run the offense.
Last thing on this, often it is framed around Kincaid, that question. What about for Hawes? Like, to what degree would you want to go to with he can give them more catching the ball than he did last year, which was a little bit. I mean, there were a couple of big plays, the one in the opener. And same thing, like when he's out there, it's not, oh, we're always going to be running the ball, and sometimes he'll be going out in routes and they'll be throwing it.
It's a good question. I like what I saw yesterday by him, you know, getting out and catching some passes. I wouldn't want them to, you know, have him as a primary target, build a passing game around, unless it's like obviously a little dump off and you're doing a rollout or something like that. But you know where he excels though, Joe, is because he is such a good blocker. You know, he can chip and then get out, you know, 10 yards, turn around, make a catch. And then once, you know, once a defense starts seeing that, you get that play down the field. You get that seam pass. You saw that against Baltimore. You saw that yesterday. He's more of a sneaky pass-catching threat than people realize. And when he was drafted, we were told that. We were told, hey, he's a really great blocker, but he can catch the ball. Like, he can be a part of the passing game if you want him to. And I think red zone is where he could be very effective because – you know, you're putting your big personnel out there, and then suddenly, you know, he's going to be able to leak out for a catch. So it's going to be really interesting to see how much they lean into 12 personnel, 13 personnel, and how those guys, what their usage is throughout the year.
He had a couple of red zone touchdowns last year, I remember, where I'm sure the defense expected him to be blocking, and he was, like, alone in the end zone because they just didn't think he was probably going to run a route. And he, he only caught a couple last year, but there was at least two that I remember like that. Elsewhere around the field yesterday, Sal, in terms of the offense overall, like how sharp did you feel like Allen was, and how much of a challenge or a different challenge did it seem like the Browns defense was?
So, Joe, I went into this after listening to Daryl Reiter and reading and listening to people here in Cleveland on The Fan and other reporters. My sense was the Bills' offense would have a bit of a struggle against the Browns defense. Like, it'd be a good even day. Like, that's a good matchup. You know what I mean? Because the Browns defense, for the most part, has been pretty much dominating here against their offense. But the question always was it because the Browns offense just is not that good, and Shedeur Sanders and Deshaun Watson and all that? It actually turned out the opposite, to be quite honest with you. So of the four units, offense and defense for both sides, the Bills offense was the best unit on the field yesterday. Josh Allen was great yesterday. I mean, I'm reading a tweet here. This is Nick Camino. Nick Camino, main sports anchor at KYC TV3 in Cleveland. Okay, I'm gonna give him a shout out.
Okay.
I found this tweet. He wrote this. You ready? He wrote, "I've never seen a quarterback operate on the back practice fields in Berea like Josh Allen did today. Don't take that for granted, Bills fans." Like, you had Cleveland reporters going, okay, like, that's different. We don't see that. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I get it. Like, that should be natural for people to think that about Josh Allen. But it wasn't just because he's Josh Allen. Like, he was great yesterday. And I don't think he threw a pick. You know, a lot of times you're practicing so much. You're doing a lot of things. Picks can be overblown. I'm going on all these Cleveland pods and radio stations. I did them this morning. Mm-hmm. You know, and the fans are saying stuff on Twitter about, well, Watson threw a pick and Shedeur didn't. I'm like, yeah, I think the pick was tipped, right? Picks are created differently. You can't judge on that. You judge on the operation, the command, the accuracy, the control, the decision making. Josh Allen basically was Josh Allen yesterday in a practice setting.
Yeah, I saw another Cleveland reporter, I don't remember who it was off the top of my head, where the tweet was, look how easy it is, how much easier it looks to play offense when you have a guy like this as your quarterback. And when you're, you know, when you're watching the Browns quarterbacks year after year, then it probably feels like a really stark difference. How about that matchup? The Bills defense against the Browns offense, and also what the Browns quarterbacks looked like. It was only a couple clips. I wasn't watching every play, obviously, but Watson made a couple throws that I honestly did not think he was still capable of.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so it's funny going back to what you just said about, you know, how they're perceiving Josh Allen. Matt and I were recording our podcast. It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. By the way, we put that out right after the practice yesterday. People can check that out on the podcast at Sal Sports on YouTube and download it, whatever, listening. But we did it right after the practice and to get our thoughts out there. And there was another, there was Cleveland, I think Tony Grossi, I think he's a Cleveland reporter, right? He was doing a podcast next to us with somebody. And somebody on that show basically just summed it up and said, today we saw the difference of, you know, basically one team had Josh Allen and the other team didn't. And that's the biggest difference. And it's true. Like I said, you saw that. That's what they said. Like, you saw how it can matter. The Bills had Josh Allen, the Browns don't. So that said, the Browns do have a quarterback competition. Deshaun Watson, Shedeur Sanders, a lot's been made of it. I agree with you. I thought Deshaun Watson made a couple of really nice plays and throws. Not that Shedeur didn't. He had some nice moments. In fact, I thought the Browns offense did a nice job moving the ball against the Bills. I would have liked to have seen the Bills. If there's a criticism of the Bills yesterday from me, I thought a few times they gave a little too much space in the passing game. Guys, you know, not down the field. Like, you know, a lot of times last year you'd see like, okay, they make the catch and they come up and tackle them, but don't let them make the catch there. Be a little more contested. I thought that could have happened a little bit more yesterday. Not that it happened all day, but I thought that was something that the Browns took advantage of, and that was both quarterbacks. Deshaun found Casey Concepcion down the field for a really nice play at one point. I thought he did a nice job to make a couple decisions to tuck the ball and run. He could still run, you know, and we saw that in the playoff game against Houston in 2019 when he beat the Bills like that. So I thought that was the case. Here is the biggest difference between one of the biggest differences between having Josh Allen and what the Browns have. Every time there was a red zone period, a 2-minute period, a chaotic moment, things get sped up, that's when the Browns fell apart on offense. They just didn't have the operation down. They started a 2-minute drill. I think they got a penalty on the first or second play because they weren't lined up properly or a timeout had to be called. Those are things that you just can't happen. They happen to every team. It's happened to the Bills, but it seemed like those were happening too often. Very end of practice, they're doing a red zone drill, and they move the ball. Suddenly they get down. I'm sorry, it wasn't a red zone. It was a 2-minute drill, but they got into the red zone. I'm sorry. And they move the ball, and they get inside like the Bills' 5-yard line, and then Joe Andreessen makes a stop. Max Harrison makes a play, and they just can't get in the end zone. And there's like 10 seconds left, two plays left, and they didn't even get to fourth down because they ran out of time. So that was the difference. It felt like to me, for both those quarterbacks, they have to do a better job in Cleveland of the operation and when things are critical and chaotic of settling things down.
That is where Allen, I wonder if he's almost even underrated in that area.
So, right,
I mean,
yes.
Not everybody. I'm trying to pull it up quickly here, but do you see the thing Dan Orlovsky does where he like ranks every quarterback on traits, like, or top 10 at every trait every year? And I'm trying to see, I think it was command of the offense. He had Josh Allen number one in the NFL because of like the checks he makes at the line, how comfortable he seems and all of that now. And all that happens, well, a lot of that happens before the snap. And I mean, at this point, right, like when you're Allen and you're going into your, what is it now? Is it the 9th year of his career? Like all of that just seems like it's second nature to him.
I agree. And, you know, both Shedeur has a lot of athletic ability. Deshaun Watson does. I said he was scrambling around, but you know, Josh thrives on that, right? We know the off script plays. And when you have a Josh Allen for this long, your offense knows that too. You practice that stuff a lot. You know, those guys know to be available. Look at the Dalton Kincaid play. Look at a Jackson Hawes touchdown. Like, this is what they do. It's part of the offense. It's literally kind of built in like that. You know, there was a couple of times where I thought that the Bills' offensive line gave up a little too much pressure in a red zone drill, and Josh scrambled one. I posted some video, a lot of video yesterday. Go check it out. A lot of video. And there were two instances where back-to-back plays, Josh gets pressure and scrambles right and throws it away. A, you don't want to see the pressure. B, good job about throwing it away. You know why? Because on the very next play, he throws a dart to Josh Palmer in the back of the end zone for a touchdown. If he doesn't scramble and throw it away, you never get to the third down play where he hits Josh Palmer. Maybe if it's a different quarterback, they take a sack. Now you don't have that opportunity. Or they don't throw it away and there's an interception. Those are the little things that matter when you talk about command of an offense.
Quickly before we run out of time here, Sal, there were a couple of players down the depth chart that I wanted to talk about with you after yesterday. Jordan Hancock, I saw one clip you posted of him, and this is on the heels of, was Jim Leonard the other day said that he's going to start transitioning maybe full-time to safety? I don't remember his exact wording, but Hancock, I liked him in the middle of the regular season last year before the playoffs, and where are we at with him right now, both, I guess, positionally, and if it's safety, like that's crowded there, right?
Did he say that or did he say nickel?
Or was it maybe I have it flipped? Let me find it.
I have to go back and look because he had played pretty much nickel most of training camp. Maybe they're working him in more at safety. We'll see that though. But
okay,
you're right.
He said he's primarily been playing nickel safety, and they're going to start working him. Excuse me, one more time. Hancock's been primarily playing nickel corner. Leonard said they're going to start working him at safety.
Right, and he now, I think, is at a point where you can start to add more on his plate is what he's saying.
Right.
You're right. That's a crowded room at safety. The only thing is because of the injuries to C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Jalen Kilgore, by the way, who didn't practice yesterday, you had Cole Bishop a bit banged up, obviously. You know, you want to have a couple more options there. But I like what I've seen from him at nickel. He has really ascended the last like week and a half. The first week and a half of training camp, I didn't hear anything. Like Jordan Hancock was kind of like, I didn't notice he was out there. He wasn't really doing anything to be noticed. That has changed. He is starting to figure it out. And you love seeing that from a second-year player. It was an interception. I had a video of Kincaid, I think it was, scoring. And then I heard the commotion, so I panned my camera, my phone, over to the second field next to us, and everybody's going crazy. It felt like a pick six. I guess from what I heard, it was a tip ball. He intercepted it, and he might have scored, but he might have got taken down. But either way, he's in the right position. That's what you want to see. So that's a player that I think is starting to, like I said, figure it out, and they can start to feel confident now and maybe him doing multiple things on the defense.
Is he's the new Cam Lewis, maybe?
That's right.
Really bold.
The Bills... Even though Sean McDermott's not here, every team loves versatility, right? You want to have as much versatility as possible. It just allows you to come up with a game day roster to kind of massage the numbers. It allows you to put guys in that maybe, you know, you get an injury in a game that, okay, what are we doing? We're thin here. Well, we can play that guy there. So, yeah, no doubt. Maybe Jordan Hancock, because someone like Cam Lewis was for so many years able to do that.
And lastly, before we let you go here, is Ian Wheeler on his way to being the preseason hero for everybody? Where he put up some numbers right in the first preseason game, and he had done that last preseason against the Bills. He was the Bears running back when they scored all those points. Where are we at with him even making the roster, Sal? Because Ty Johnson is still out.
I still think it's an uphill climb to make the roster because I think Ty Johnson, to me, feels like he's at least trending like he's going to play. But if he isn't, if Ty Johnson were out, you need a third running back. That's the question. Is he the fourth running back in the depth chart over Frank Gore Jr.? Matt Bove said on the pod yesterday, he believes he is. He said, I believe he has surpassed him. Now that is because of the flash. I think Frank Gore Jr. had a really nice day last week. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons is too, like Ian Wheeler is just, he's big, he's noticeable, and he's making plays. And if you go to some of that video I put out, did you see the play he made yesterday where he trucked the defender?
Yes, yeah.
It was like kind of 15 yards away from me. And he, go, Joe, folks,
ran him over.
So,
yeah.
So Jonathan Acosta of Channel 2 had the video that I quote tweeted. So go check that out. And I even say, like, this is the play that Matt and I talked about where Ian Wheeler trucked the defender. And he just put his face mask right into his chest as he's running. You could hear it, man. That guy runs hard. He was the UFL Bowl, the United Bowl MVP. It's still, to me, outside looking in, but that's because of injuries. If you were to have an injury to one of the three running backs and you have to have another one on the roster, the question is Ian Wheeler now ahead of Frank Gore Jr.? And I could see that being the case, but I think the next couple of weeks will go a long way in determining that.
Right. Roster maybe wasn't the right way to ask that. It's more of a battle for who's the practice squad running back, kind of.
Yeah, and they could keep both, Joe. They could, but you know, they've kept a couple on the practice squad before. They like them both. They don't want to, you know, I mean, you could lose any practice squad guy, but you know, you want to keep them in your building and be mm-hmm. ready to play. But that's really the question is, you know, what would happen if they needed a guy? And maybe it's different depending on which guy would be out. If James Cook was out for some reason versus Ty Johnson versus Ray Davis, who, by the way, real quick, something to note on him. Mm-hmm. I asked Joe Brady about Ray Davis returning the first punt last week, and he said Ray wants the punt return job. He said he wants that job and
right.
giving him an opportunity. So, you know, he said he's clearly in the mix. So very interesting that you know they're kind of trying to sort through all of that as well.
I saw your tweet about him saying that, and I looked up. I went to look up because – running back, I don't know why this is, but there are very few running backs in the NFL that are punt returners. It's like three guys have been a full-time returner in the last like 5 years in the NFL. I don't know why that is. It also does not mean that Ray Davis can't do it. It's just weird to me. Like, and the Bills actually right. had one of them. I think Nyheim Hines was one of the three guys. So like it happens, but it's weird that it's very rarely a running back. But maybe it'll be Davis here. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, guys. Have a great day.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Yeah, I think the list was like Tariq Cohen, Nyheim Hines, and there was another guy that wasn't really a big name or anything. But we'll see. Maybe Ray Davis is the punt returner. We did not get to kicker there. I want to get a little bit into Bass when we come back. But obviously a lot happening yesterday, a lot of video, a lot of good stuff from the Bills against the Browns. And yeah, the offense sounded like it was really sharp, and that was without a bunch of the receivers that are going to be playing for this team regularly. 803-0550 is the phone number. On Bass, when we come back, and then we have a Bears guest coming up at 9 o'clock. Lauren Cox from...
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Keep cool out there, folks. It's going to be a hot one.
We the people love summer baseball. The food is over the top. The cheers come from the chest. We came with friends, but we met new ones. We have seats, but we're standing. They say it's anyone's game. But from what we can see, it's everyone's. Baseball for the people.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.